Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most interesting conversations of the day. You may have noticed I'm not Sharad Kutan. I'm Melissa Idris, standing in for Sharad. And joining me on the show today, I have Johan Mahmud Merican, who is the director of the National Budget Office under the Ministry of Finance. He's also the chairman of My Salam, which is the newly launched insurance scheme for the B40. So welcome to the show.
Yes, Melissa, thank you for having me.
And that's exactly what we're going to talk today. My Salam, right?
Yes.
The My Salam B40 National Protection Scheme, full
yes.
name. It's quite a divisive matter. There are those that support it, and there are those that are skeptical of it, shall we say, Johan. But I do want to begin with the most basic information. Let's get all the facts out there first and how it works. So it's categorized for the B40, which
yep.
means that this is a households under earning under 3,000 ringgit.
4,000.
4,000 ringgit. Okay, so if you're a recipient of Bantuan Sara Hidup, you're likely to be under the B40 category.
So maybe just give an overview.
Sure.
Well, obviously, we may be divisive. Obviously, I think it's great. You expect that from me. And what My Salam essentially is, it's health protection based on takaful. In terms of who benefits, it's the B40 households who are already registered under our Bantuan Sara Hidup. So
okay.
it's about 3.8 million who are already covered under individuals between 18 years old and 55 years old.
Okay.
And what My Salam is, unlike perhaps conventional health insurance, this is really more for an income replacement arrangement. So there are two main scenarios where if a B40 individual in the age range, if they get diagnosed with a critical illness, there's a list of 36 covering, you know, cancer, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you know, kidney failure, they're then eligible for a one-time, once-in-a-lifetime 8,000 ringgit.
Okay.
And if they get hospitalized in a government hospital and getting treatment, they also get this 50 ringgit a day up to a maximum of 14 days or 700 ringgit
okay.
a year.
All right. And that is the income replacement that
yes.
you were talking about. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the 8,000 ringgit one-off contribution.
Yeah.
So that is essentially, again, as you mentioned, similar to the income replacement. The income replacement is almost like a per diem, daily
yes.
per diem or a lump sum per diem. But the 8,000 ringgit, what is it for?
Well, maybe just as a context, you know, government already, I think, is very focused on ensuring the well-being of the rakyat. And you would notice that this was announced as part of the 2019 budget,
mm-hmm.
Where despite the government inheriting what we call a quite challenging financial condition, the government did say that we're still very focused and prioritised people's well-being. And that's why you see that whilst many other ministries might have seen its allocation reduced, the allocation for education, transportation, housing and health particularly was not reduced. And this was a new innovative initiative to really help anchor and enhance the well-being of the rakyat, particularly the lower income, the ones that we feel really would stand to benefit from this.
Okay, so is it not quite your typical insurance policy?
Oh, certainly it's not.
Okay.
I mean, for one, you know, if you think of a typical private sector health insurance, one, obviously it's profit oriented. Secondly, it typically would be for covering the cost of treatment. And third, typically before you can even buy a health insurance, typically you have to go for a health check, health
right,
screening.
Right.
You know, this is provided by the government. It's provided for free to the B40 group. It's also not for covering the cost of treatment, because when you go to a government hospital, it's already nominal in terms of the cost of treatment. So,
okay.
So this is really to help them ensure that they can feel they can have the peace of mind and afford going for treatment to cover even, let's say, the transportation. I'll come back to that a bit later. And thirdly, you know, because it's also not anchored on profits, you know, we try to make it as flexible as possible. So whilst a private insurance might require you to have a health screening
mm-hmm.
and if you already have a condition, there's no way you can be able to get
right.
coverage. Under
so
these
if you
conditions,
have a pre-existing condition.
Yes, we automatically cover everyone within our BSH
So you don't have to go for health screening. So even pre-existing conditions are covered under My Salam?
So it's covered in the sense that if you already have a pre-existing condition and you then need to go for hospitalization, you're still eligible to the 50 a day. However, given that this scheme was announced in the 2019 budget and basically the coverage period starts in 1st of January 2019 for
mm-hmm.
5 years,
mm-hmm.
what it means that it's only if you're only eligible for the 8,000 ringgit if you get diagnosed with a critical illness after the 1st of January. 2019.
Okay, all right. So if you're diagnosed after the 1st of Jan, you can claim the 8,000 ringgit.
Yes.
But if you have a pre-existing condition prior to January 1st,
yes,
you're not eligible.
Yes.
For the but if you're hospitalized, you still get,
yes,
the 50 ringgit a day,
yes,
per diem. I see. All
exactly,
right.
Melissa.
Okay, just talk to me a little bit about the illnesses that are covered. You mentioned heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's.
Yes.
What are some of the, so we're talking about critical illnesses, right? Does the level of severity of the illness matter?
Yes. So first, I would encourage everyone to go to our website, www.mysalam.com.my. There's a list of the 36, which I must confess I haven't fully memorized. But certainly,
that's a lot to memorize, though,
Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, heart disease, you know, brain, you know, if you require brain surgery. But certainly, yes, there is an issue of severity, because some would notice, for example, that diabetes is not in the list. But as you know, diabetes, when you're first diagnosed with diabetes, it can be at a very early stage where potentially the doctors would only really advise you to change your lifestyle and you really don't need treatment. So in terms of severity, it don't, the 8,000 only really kicks in once you have kidney failure requiring dialysis.
Okay.
So, and the same thing applies as well to, for example, even heart conditions. So there is a industry, or shall we say health standard, in terms of when this would be triggered in. That list of 36 is really based on an industry standard on critical illness, and it's already quite an established protocol in terms of determining at which point you are then eligible.
So this would depend on the diagnosis of the doctor.
Yes.
So if you are diagnosed with, say, diabetes, at a certain point you are then eligible because it hits a certain level of,
yes,
severity. I
correct.
Can understand. And I do want to also address, you mentioned it's 18 to
55,
the age bracket of the B40, right? There was a lot of, I think, criticism that came out after this was announced by Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng, you know, saying that, well, really, it's after 55 is when you are actually in need of the most health, medical health coverage.
Okay, maybe just give it conceptually.
Sure.
It's intended as an income replacement and targeted at the B40. And I think one of the key issues that we're quite concerned by is that, as I mentioned, treatment in government hospitals is already at a nominal charge. But what we find is that there are many instances where those, particularly in terms of the target group, the B40, some particularly if they live in more rural areas, you know, they could be diagnosed with a critical illness, let's say something like cancer.
Right.
But very often, there might even be a situation where they hesitate or they might delay treatment for a couple of reasons. You know, one, I mean, they may always see typically naturally a shock when you get diagnosed with critical illness, but there's also sometimes the tentativeness because they could be the main breadwinner for their household. And taking time away from working to get treatment obviously could be something that bears on their mind.
Right.
And I think this is where, you know, the My Salam intends to give a peace of mind and facilitate early treatment, especially for a target group of the B40, so that they know that, you know, they get this lump sum payment, and also for the time that they're getting treatment, they have this at least a little bit to just tide them over.
Okay.
Because I think, as you know, especially for critical illness, early treatment is critical.
That's right. Okay.
For better
so
outcomes.
This is really about providing the B40 with some kind of peace of mind, a replacement income,
yes,
in the event.
So I think
so
the age profile then ties in with, you know, targeting the breadwinner of the families.
And you mentioned that this is only for public hospitals, right?
Yes.
So this is already for the, I guess, income bracket that is being served by public hospitals, not private hospitals.
I mean, you would expect that the B40 would get treatment in public hospitals. In fact, you might be worried if someone goes to private hospitals, you'd really...
They might not be eligible.
You wonder why are they on the BSH database.
Very quickly, you mentioned that claims are able to be... you can make claims March 1st. So it's been almost more than a month now.
Just to clarify, yeah, Melissa, so the coverage period starts in 1st of January.
Right.
But in terms of the infrastructure to process claims, we only got that up and running in the 1st of March. So if they receive their diagnosis on the 1st of January, 2nd January, they can still claim for it. It's just that we only were open for applications from the 1st of March.
How many applications, how many claims have been
so in the first of so in the first month of March, we've had already about 1,000 applications and claims, but you know, our client charters really to try and process them within 2 weeks. So within that first month, we've only been able to pay out about 100 claims already.
Okay, early days yet, right?
So it's very early days, but
days
we expect
yet.
These numbers to really rise quite quickly.
We're going to come back and continue our conversation about My Salam after these messages. Stay with us. stock. I have on the show with me Johan Merican, who is the chairman of MySalam, which is the insurance scheme for the B40. Now, we're talking a little bit about the details of the insurance scheme. I kind of want to get down to the root of the matter. What exactly is MySalam trying to address? What is the issue, the problem that MySalam is trying to fix or address?
I think you really need to see MySalam in the context of the government really expanding or ensuring the, you know, as much as possible in a completeness of the government's social protection scheme, particularly for the lower income, ensuring that really those in need of government assistance gets it. And I think particularly for the lower income group, as we earlier discussed, there is a concern that, you know, especially the breadwinners of low income families might really feel under pressure that even if they are ill, they really don't even have the capacity to seek treatment. And this extent, you know, MySalam provides this assistance that if they fall really chronically ill, which obviously might impede their ability to work, and also if they then need to actually spend time in hospital away from work, they actually have this to help them tide things over. So it really ensures that, you know, the government's focus again is on the well-being of people and for those in need, and this provides that assistance to help that group get the sort of treatment to hopefully enhance their health outcomes.
Is part of that conversation, I guess, you know, MySalam being perhaps a first step in eventually introducing a social national insurance framework? I mean, is that, or is this just specifically to take care of the B40, which, as we know, are underinsured?
I think there are two parts to that, Melissa. So I think as part of a social protection system, actually, you know, Malaysia actually is quite blessed. I mean, we have various components of a social protection scheme. Actually, first, better than most countries, we really have quite an extensive public healthcare system, which is obviously heavily subsidized and funded by the government, enabling those in really in need to get, you know, healthcare at relatively nominal costs. In addition to that, we also have various elements, whether, you know, it's things like the EPF, SOCSO, welfare department. And I guess this is additional piece of that jigsaw that really helps. And I guess, you know, you can see the scenario, especially if you have a critical illness, it can be, you know, quite a disaster, particularly for families. And this then provides this, you know, injection of assistance to that particular scenario. So it's part of complementing the entire suit and scheme of the social protection scheme. But at the same time, as you rightly pointed out, I think particularly the low income, and I think even Malaysians in general are undercovered from an insurance perspective.
Well, that's true, right? Yeah. I mean, but insurance penetration rates are, I think, only about 60%. And of the B40, that's only about 30%. I do have to say, though, Johan, I mean, while I think it is an interesting scheme and it is targeted to helping the B40, it really does nothing to address the ballooning cost of medical costs in Malaysia, right? I mean, we all know that it's expensive to get sick, you know, sometimes in this country, and medical inflation is about 10 to 15% per annum. So it doesn't really address the structural problems of what is happening in our medical industry here.
I think you're right. I think this is a global phenomenon, rising drug prices. And sometimes, you know, it's not like Malaysia's unique. I think even in the US, you know, the escalating prices, whenever you have the combination of private health insurance and private providers, difficulties in terms of really how do you regulate healthcare prices. But I think in that context, I think what at least the government does, which is, I think, better off than perhaps many other jurisdictions, as I said, a significant portion of the population is covered by public health. Maybe not you or me, but at least a significant portion of less well-to-do are covered by the public health system. In terms of the private sector, there is also a bridge in that, you know, some parts of the public health system is also providing quasi-private. So, you know, as you know, there are private wings in the university hospitals. So also provide, shall we say, intermediate solution of intermediate costs. I think in addition to that, the government also regulates in terms of fees that can be charged by,
I think, by
doctors
also,
and specialists, so that perhaps helps also moderate some of the inflation in terms of healthcare costs. So I think there are certain efforts being done, but, you know, this is still very much a work in progress.
I mean, you have to take kind of a bird's eye view about this. I mean, it's not just one component in trying to fix a whole structural problem. But since we're talking about, you know, addressing problems, I mentioned earlier that this is quite a, I guess, you know, people are two minds about this. There are allegations out there that this scheme was kind of rushed, the rollout of the scheme was a bit rushed out. So let's talk a bit about the backlash, Johan.
Okay.
About 40 NGOs, I believe 46 individuals as well, all have asked for this scheme to be reassessed. PSM, Parti Socialist Malaysia, is one of them. Suaram, Suara Rakyat Malaysia, is one of them. They've all asked, they all say that, look, there are issues with this scheme. So let's talk about, you know, if you could address some of these allegations. Before you do, how have you dealt with the backlash? I mean, you're aware that there are a lot of, you know, criticisms towards Mai Salam.
Okay, I don't mean to belittle these concerns, and we've looked at the memorandum, and you know, we can see where they're perhaps coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But then at the same time, perhaps, you know, coming from the government, you know, almost all the time the government is accused on acting too slowly, and it seems strange now that, you know, government has taken this very, you know, early initiative, a new government at that, you mm-hmm. know, in their first budget has already tabled this, you know, this quite, you know, innovative and also interesting extension of the social protection scheme, which I think all parties say that this is, you know, the sort of thing that government should be focused on. And here, despite, shall we say, the government inheriting, shall we say, a fiscally challenging financial position, they've been able to develop this program.
But you know where it's coming from, right?
Under this context. Okay. So that's one part. So, you know, I think government should be at least given some credit to at least being acting sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
If you then look at what they're raising, you know, they're raising the issues, like, you know, why is it only 18 to 55? Why is it only the 36? You know, yes, we can go into extensive detail. I mean, the 36 really is already
36 critical illnesses.
Critical illness, that's already based on an industry standard. Although having said that, whilst the list of critical illnesses based on entry standard, as I mentioned as well, the terms of this is so much better than a typical private insurance. There's no health screening, we cover everyone, and we've tried to simplify really the process, requiring very minimal in terms of documentation required. Because at the end of the day, this is not a private insurance program. We're not interested in making money. In fact, there's no profit element in this instrument.
Mm-hmm.
What was contributed in terms of the $2 billion from Great Eastern ultimately will end up in the hands of the rakyat, true claims.
I do want to come to Great Eastern's involvement in this scheme, but I wanted to come back to what you talked about. You know, sometimes the government doesn't get credit for rolling out policies fast enough.
Yes.
But I think the concern is with the execution. So often with rollout of policies that are rushed, the fear is that in the execution is where there is, I guess, you know, weaknesses in our execution. So do you think there was, I mean, part of the allegations that I've read online have also included the fact that there wasn't enough research or actuarial assessment put behind the scheme. Can you address that?
So I think, you know, we've now got this scheme, which from 1st of January will help anyone in the B40 get a benefit if they get a critical illness. That is a situation that's better than before 1st of January. In terms of trying to enhance it, you know, well, it's based on already industry standards. So certainly, I mean, I would imagine, I'm not speaking on their behalf, but certainly if you're in a situation where you suddenly would get cancer or Alzheimer's, certainly you're much better off having this than if you did not have it. So why would we want to delay that scenario? Perhaps one quibble they raised was this, the age limitation between 18 to 55.
Right.
But again, as I explained, the government was coming from a position of trying to help particularly the
income
earners mm-hmm. of low-income households who sometimes delay treatment. And certainly it's very much the policy of the government. We really want to try and ensure people get early treatment for conditions, because that really has a major determinant on health outcomes. I really struggle to find why anyone would want to object to us providing assistance and promoting early treatment. With regards to the issue about actuarial valuations, or whether there was some insinuation that perhaps Great Eastern benefits mm-hmm. from providing Mai Salam. I mean, just to be clear, the policy for foreign insurance company is that they ought to sell down from being wholly owned down to 70%.
70%. So 30% must be divested to local shareholders.
But as it happens, particularly in the insurance industry, many of the foreign insurance companies have been unable to find local investors perhaps to meet the expectation in terms of valuation and also interested in terms of buying a minority stake in an insurance company. So the government perhaps has come up with this innovative option to then say that in lieu of selling down the 30%, you then can make this contribution. And this contribution is basically calculated based on about a 10-year equivalent of profits relating to that 30% discounted to present value. Now, in some respects, I would have thought particularly an organisation like PSM would be particularly happy that instead of benefiting, say, a very, let's say, potentially small group of large investors, you know, which, you know, determine people of high net worth or even institutions of high net worth that can afford buying up 30% stake, they'll be very happy that this option is one which translates towards a contribution that benefits millions of Malaysians.
All right, we're going to come back to that, Johan. We're going to talk a little bit about Great Eastern's involvement in this right here on Let's Talk, but stay with us. Let's Talk. I'm Melissa Idris, standing in for Sharad Kutan today. With me on the show, John Merican, chairman of My Salam. We're talking about the B40 insurance scheme. So there's been a lot of consternation, Johan, about the fact that Great Eastern Holdings is in charge of My Salam. So it's Great Eastern Takaful that's administering the scheme. You talked a little bit earlier about the divestment. In lieu of the divestment of its foreign shares, Great Eastern contributed 2 billion ringgit to the seed fund for My Salam. That's got a lot of people wringing their hands. You can understand where the concern is coming from. There's concern that this will only benefit the private insurance companies instead of the customers.
Okay.
Can we talk about that?
Oh, yes, please. Certainly, in the way it's been structured, and this was something that was negotiated by Bandar and the Ministry of Finance with Great Eastern, there is really no avenue where Great Eastern profits from this arrangement. It starts off that they are making this contribution as part of meeting the policy requirement. But then in the arrangement where after the seed fund is provided and we then procure the Takaful coverage for the B40, Great Eastern Takaful in no way is able to profit, and let me explain why. In the scenario that over the 5 years, the claims that are made by the households is less than the premiums that have been paid to Great Eastern Takaful, the difference needs to then be contributed back into the fund.
Okay, so all the money goes back into My Salam.
So basically, if there's a surplus or profit, they can't keep it, it has to be contributed back. But in reverse, if the claims exceeds the premium that's been paid to Great Eastern, they have to bear the losses. So it's a one-sided bet, actually. So there's some people have raised this concern, said, oh, they've contributed it, why don't we then open it up to others?
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would basically want to sign up for this one-sided bet.
Are you
where
saying
they
that...
They have no opportunity to make a profit, but they have the opportunity to make a loss.
So what's the catch, Johan? I mean, why would a profit-oriented company like Great Eastern, which is a private company with shareholders to think about, why would they sign up for this scheme?
I think of it as... don't think of it as two different limbs, the contribution of cash and providing this. I think when the government then engaged with Great Eastern in terms of meeting its this regulatory requirement, and I think they were coming under increasing pressure because it's been a few years that they've not been able to satisfy this condition.
Right.
So I think it was in their interest to really accommodate as much as possible the government in basically meeting their regulatory requirement through this option. And so that option, and also ultimately you also have to think, this needs to be an option that's linked to an insurance regulation. And therefore, it is natural that the contribution should then be used for insurance. Because the other question that sometimes raises, oh, they contribute 2 billion, couldn't we just use that to, I don't know,
beef up the public healthcare.
Or build schools or whatever it is. Yeah. But I think this needs to be seen in the context of, actually, in the earlier genesis of it, the idea of Bandar was that actually any contributions to meet a insurance like regulatory requirement should be a contribution to an insurance industry development fund, like how you have the Capital Markets Development Fund in the SC. But I think it is more the government's intervention that then said, no, this contribution should ultimately benefit the people.
Is this opening the floodgates? I'm wondering whether it's setting a precedent here, because, you know, the idea of exchanging a policy exemption for a cash for a financial contribution, even though it is for the benefit of, you know, the B40, is that setting a dangerous precedent?
I'm not sure if you deem it a dangerous precedent if we get lots of private companies contributing lots of money for the benefit of the...
So you think that this could lead to more companies?
I think there's also need to look in also the context. This could be a judgment call, but perhaps unlike, say, banking, which obviously I think there's no disagreement that's a very strategic industry, mm-hmm. and we've had experience of the crisis where, you know, all your foreign banks then suddenly, you know, left Malaysia.
It has to be tightly regulated.
We need to ensure that banks are localised. I think the call has been made that perhaps insurance is not to that level of strategic inherently, and therefore this is actually on weighing it as an option. Mm-hmm. It's certainly something that, you know, I don't know, from a theoretical social welfare function.
it benefits more people.
So I think, right. I think that's why the structure in which it's not just a contribution of cash, but it's a contribution which enables coverage of poor households. I think this is something, I think it is in the judgment of the government, is something that is better than just meeting up that.
That regulation, as good as
if not better.
So, you know, you mentioned that Great Eastern is the only one. Are we looking at the possibility of other insurance companies perhaps wanting to participate? I know you said it was a one-sided deal, but surely, I mean, there are other foreign insurers who have not met that regulation yet. Could this be, I guess, the first step in, you know, negotiations with other foreign insurers who can participate? You know, the more the better, right?
Yes. So, just to clarify, yes, we've started with Great Eastern, but that's probably a natural start. They're the biggest. Mm-hmm. But there are still conversations that are ongoing with other foreign insurance companies, because as you rightly pointed out, not all have satisfied the equity conditions. So those conversations are continuing, and we would not be surprised if there were then other insurance companies that would choose this option to satisfy this regulatory requirement. So what that would help was then, in the future, then perhaps this fund would grow, and that perhaps would enable the government to look at how to further enhance whatever scheme that...
Could I also clarify one, I guess, ambiguity here? My Salam is supposed to be for 5 years.
Yes.
Is there, I guess, any... condition where the customers or the subscribers to My Salam or people under the My Salam scheme will have to continue on as Great Eastern customers after the 5-year period?
Okay, I also need to clarify. So now, when I mentioned that it's a one-sided bet, I think what I forgot to mention as well is that under the terms that have been negotiated and agreed between the government and Great Eastern, they also cannot benefit from the data.
So
whilst they administer the My Salam scheme, that data is kept separately, and they cannot use that data for cross-selling or even set marketing any of their products. So not only they cannot use the data to market, certainly there is no possibility or would be allowed that automatically those on My Salam would then graduate to some form of private insurance program. The other thing I should mention is that also under the arrangement that has been negotiated, the first 2 years is almost exclusively the My Salam will be administered by Great Eastern. But from the third year onwards, we've already envisaged that we'll be opening it up to other insurance companies to also then jointly provide, and they can then proportionately take up the population to be covered under My Salam.
Because the initial funding for this is 2 billion ringgit, as you mentioned earlier, from Great Eastern. So my question was, what happens if that 2 billion runs out? So the idea is to open up.
Yeah, so the first thing to highlight, as I mentioned, the 2 billion has been calculated based on a 5-year coverage. So to some extent, the terms and conditions have been calculated to cover that 5-year period, and we've already agreed what is basically the premium that's being paid to Great Eastern for that 5-year coverage.
So
and as mentioned, if it's not enough, they have to bear those losses.
Can I just quickly do the math? So it's 2 billion ringgit per, to pay the premium scheme for 3.8 million people in the B40 segment. That would work out to be 112 ringgit
yes.
per person.
Yes.
Okay, and yes. that's the premium that is being paid to Great Eastern.
You're like Ajivin on
no,
Asia's Got Talent.
Sorry, that was not math in my head. I okay. had to calculate that.
Okay, okay. But yes, okay. It's 112 right. is the premium that's been agreed, and that's to cover the 5-year period.
Okay, and if there is a shortfall, then that's Great Eastern to cover that, I understand. All right, so I think at the end of the day, we need to understand that this is also providing coverage to the B40 at no cost to
yes.
the taxpayers. So prioritizing the B40 welfare at no cost to the government coffers, which are in a bit of a pinch
yes.
right now.
Yes, completely.
Okay. All right, so at this point in time, John, I'm just wondering if you're happy with the level of awareness of B40, because of My Salam, because while you know there's a lot of misinformation out there about the scheme, a lot of people still don't know what it is. And I have to admit, even though you know I'm a news junkie myself, when it was released, I almost confused it with a Bank Negara
yes.
scheme a few years ago called Pelindungan Tenang. So what are you doing to, I guess, increase the awareness of this B40 scheme?
But just to touch on that, as you're aware, Tenang was an earlier initiative by Bank Negara to introduce more affordable insurance, also given the context of under insurance. But you're right, that's a separate program, but that's more you know, affordable if you price it up to 100 for basically buy very simple life insurance for the low income. My Salam, as mentioned, it's free. It's a health coverage which is provided to cover critical illness and hospitalization, and particularly targeted for the B40. You're right, awareness perhaps is not as great as we would like it to be, but that's partly a function of it being a new program. And also, shall we say, unlike BSH, which is sort of like linked to, you know,
that's
BSH.
That's Sarah Hidup. Mm-hmm.
Everyone who receives it, you know, sees a check or sees an amount coming into their bank account that does create initial immediate awareness, and if your neighbour gets it, you'll quickly be running
off
to
make sure I'm eligible,
make
right?
sure you want
yeah.
to get it. As it happens, and maybe that's also a factor of why we have under insurance in Malaysia, people seem to not think of in the unfortunate situation
incident,
where
something happens.
So maybe their urgency perhaps is less, but certainly those who have already been diagnosed, those who been hospitalised, certainly are contacting the government,
well,
going through the.
If you've ever been sick, you know what a financial strain that can be
yes.
on household income, right? So I think this can benefit quite a number of people. All right, any last words, Johan, you want to mention about My Salam before we wrap up?
I think this is really, as you mentioned, part of government's approach to really help the people. So certainly that's why I think there was urgency placed in terms of ensuring it got rolled out so it can immediately help, particularly those low income who have the unfortunate situation of being diagnosed with a critical illness or being hospitalised. And so, you know, I think urgency is great, and the terms are such that the private sector doesn't benefit from it. So I think it's a unique public-private partnership where even the implementation is also being, you know, done by the private sector to ensure it's, you know, done efficiently within its kind charter of 2 weeks. So I think it's already a very good scheme. Certainly, there may be room to improve it, but I certainly see no reason to delay it.
And you can go to the website to
yes.
to make your claims, to look up all the critical illnesses, to just, I guess, get your questions answered on how this works.
You can go to the website, which is www.mysalam.com.my, but there's also a hotline, 1-300-888-938. So by all means,
you
ask
have to
away.
To someone, that's right. Well, I guess that's all the time we have for Let's Talk today. I'm Melissa Idris, joined by John Merrick, the chairman of My Salam. Thank you so much for telling us about My Salam being on the show.
Thank
today.
You for having me, Melissa.
I'm Melissa Idris, signing off for today. Make sure you tune in then.